Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Santa Catalina is awaiting for me. Santa Catalina.
Santa Catalina is awaiting for me, says the Chinese military. Now, what am I talking about? Well, what I'm talking about is that a missile trail was seen yesterday off the coast of Catalina Island, off the coast of Los Angeles. And, of course, the Pentagon says they have no idea what it is. Apparently, when it comes to actual threats to America's security, we now know what the military means by don't ask, don't tell. Don't ask them because they're not going to tell you because they don't know. They do know how to frisk your wife at an airport. They know how to rub the woman's private parts. Homeland Security knows how to strip you bare at an airport. But when it comes to telling the American people what this missile was, who shot it, is it a threat, was it China doing a warning to us? Suddenly, they're all dummying up. Not a word out of the Defense Department. They're too busy trying to push don't ask, don't tell, while Homeland Security is pushing you frisk, we tell. Or shall I say, we frisk, you yell. More than a day after a CBS camera caught video of an unidentified projectile leaving a condensation trail off the California coast, the situation remains a mystery, with the so-called Defense Department insisting that it was not a missile. The Pentagon is still not sure what that was in the sky off Catalina Island, but they know it was not a missile fired by the U.S. or some other country. That they know of. The video looks for all the world like the contrail of a missile. That's what everyone says. CBS cameraman saw it. He was in a helicopter. He says, I saw a big plume coming up, rising from what looked like beyond the horizon, and it continued to grow. So he zoomed his camera in and stayed on it for about 10 minutes. He said to him, it looked like an incoming missile. It was unique and it was moving. Your Pentagon spends billions of dollars a year making sure it is never surprised by a missile launch. So finding out what the camera saw became a top priority. But the Navy and the Air Force said that they had not launched any missiles. The North American Air Defense Command, which is supposed to track incoming missiles, declared it had not been fired by any other military. But they didn't know what it was. But Doug Richardson, the editor of Jane's Missiles and Rockets, examined the video for the Times of London, and he said he was left with little doubt of what it was. He said it's a solid propellant missile. You can tell from the efflux, meaning the smoke. Richardson said it could have been a ballistic missile launched from a submarine or interceptor, the defensive anti-missile weapon used by Navy surface ships. Now, the question is, whose Navy surface ships and which Navy's submarines? The best guess right now is that it was China. And China was saying, listen, buddy, you want to play war games? You want to come into the South China Sea and flex your aircraft carriers around? I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to do what we did to you in 2007. None of you remember what happened in 2007, but that's what you pay me for. That's why you pay me, and that's why you listen to me. I have in my hand the article from November 10th, 2007. Strange date, isn't it? November 10th, 2007? Why, isn't today November 10th, 2010? Goodness, it's 3 years to the date. 11-10-07. What happened on November 10th, 2007? 3 years ago to the day. Only Michael Savage has put two and three together and come up with the Navy and the Defense Department saying, well, when it comes to strange missile launch contrails, we have a policy, which is don't ask because we won't tell. Well, 3 years ago, the U.S. Navy was on an exercise near China. And a Chinese Sun-class submarine popped up in the heart of a recent Pacific exercise at that time, right near the vast USS Kitty Hawk, a 1,000-foot supercarrier with 4,500 personnel on board. How did this happen? Apparently, the U.S. Navy was embarrassed. The Americans had no idea China's fast-growing submarine fleet had reached such a level of sophistication or that it posed such a threat. One NATO figure 3 years ago said the effect was as big a shock as the Russians launching Sputnik. Where did it happen? It took place 3 years ago in the ocean between southern Japan and Taiwan. It was a big embarrassment for the Pentagon. Now let's go back. November 07. Wasn't old G.W. Bush president, the newly popular, newly invented George W. Bush, who Wallbanger has the... I don't understand how you people don't see through this, that Rush and Wallbanger are front men for the Republican Party. I don't know how many times I have to tell you. I am the Tea Party of radio. I am the Tea Party of radio. They are mouthpieces, water carriers for the Republican Party. And Bush was a fiscal socialist. What are they reinventing the guy for? Bush built up the government bigger than four administrations prior to him. Now all of a sudden he's the wonderful senior president from the past. He's sort of a Republican Jimmy Carter, bobbling around, signing books. I understand he has to sign his books with a mirror. The way he spoke for so many years. He spoke fiscal conservatism, and he gave us fiscal socialism. So let's go back 3 years. Old Bush was the president. And all of a sudden, we have big aircraft carriers surrounded by a cordon of ships to protect it. And what happens? The Chinese slip a submarine that is so silent in the middle of it, pop up next to our aircraft carrier, and our Navy is busy trying to impose diversity. The Navy is spending 40% of its energy trying to see how they can put women on submarines rather than they are spending time figuring out how to stop an attack by a Chinese submarine. It was certainly a wake-up call for the Americans, said Jane's fighting ships. It would tie in with what we see the Chinese trying to do, which appears to be to deter the Americans from interfering or operating in their backyard, particularly in relation to Taiwan. In January, China carried a successful missile test shooting down a satellite in orbit for the first time. So how did this happen? How in the world can the Kitty Hawk, a 1,000-foot aircraft carrier, which is surrounded by a dozen other American warships, which are out there to protect the carrier from hostile aircraft, that's part of the costly defensive screen, which also includes two U.S. submarines, and they couldn't detect this Chinese submarine. Now, what does that have to do with now? Let's go forward. I read you a story from November 10, 2007. Now, 3 years to the day, November 10, 2010, there's a missile trail off the coast of Catalina. And only Michael Savage, the author of Trickle Up Poverty, is putting two and two together. And I'm telling you that I agree with Jaynes. This was China saying, sorry, you're no longer the superpower you thought you were. Sorry, we can slip right through your defensive shield. We could sink your aircraft carrier anytime we want. Because you've been so busy trying to diversify your Navy. You're trying to make sure that all of the kids who drop out of high school have a nice hot meal and a pair of shoes. So you give them jobs in the Navy. I've been on those ships. You've never seen anything like this. It looks like the high schools that you left behind. I'm not going to sit here and say to you every time they wear a uniform, everyone in a uniform is suddenly a hero. I love that hokum. Everyone in the uniform is morally superior and somehow mentally superior and somehow patriotic. A goodly percentage of them couldn't get any other jobs. If you don't like it, then study what I just said to you and get back to me. But let's go back to the U.S. Navy under Mr. Mullen. Mike Mullen, Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mike Mullen. Defense Secretary Robert Gates over the weekend gives a speech in Australia and says, quick, pass, don't ask, don't tell, before Congress comes back into session. They're obsessed with their social contract with the radical left that has taken over this country. Cheers arise from my audience. These men are not fit to run our military. These men are running our military off a cliff. And instead of making certain that we are safe, they're doing the exact opposite. And now when we have a missile trail off the coast of California that even that experts are saying was clearly a launched missile, they're saying we have no idea what it was, but don't worry, my darling. We know it was not anything to worry about. Leave it to Janet Napolitano to strip search your little girl. That's right. Give up all of your freedoms. Remember what Ben Franklin said? Do any of you remember what Ben Franklin said, that funny guy with the weird Ben Franklin glasses stolen by the hippies? Ben Franklin said, those who give up a little of their freedom for a little security will have neither. And so you let them use Al-Qaeda. You let them use 911 to take away a little of your freedom a bit at a time. Then they created a new monstrosity called the Department of Homeland Security, which instead of protecting you, is now making you the enemy. Making you the enemy. You are now the enemy of Homeland Security. That's right. You have become the enemy. They will not define terrorism as Islamic terrorism. They will not define Islamofascism as Islamofascism. They will not define the wars we are at as wars. You are the enemy to the Department of Homeland Security. And that's what this last election was about. You don't know this because none of the dupes in the media will tell it to you, but I will tell it to you. 60 Democrat socialists were thrown out, not only because they've wrecked the economy through their drunken spending and corruption and criminality, but because they have impoverished our national security. They have impoverished our Defense Department. They've impoverished every aspect of our life. That's why they were fired. And if all of the senators were up for election, I can guarantee you 60 of them would have gone as well. But they weren't up for election. The election's over, but now the fun begins. And where is the great divider himself? Why, the great divider just had a nice vacation. Went to India, had a couple of good meals, showed the children around to the Muslim shrines, didn't go to a Buddhist shrine, Hindu shrine, didn't go visit the slaughterhouse where the Jews were killed like animals by Muslims. Instead, he gave a speech, an idiotic, pompous, idiotic speech about the wonders of Islam. In the middle of a Hindu country, the wonders of Islam. India. He had the audacity to tell them about the peace-loving Muslims over in Pakistan. Ladies and gentlemen, we live in very strange times. We have a totally incompetent president. We have a totally incompetent media. And we have an electorate that has finally awakened from its slumber. But many of you have gone back to sleep thinking that you've gotten something for your vote. All you got is a change of window dressing. Thus far, all you got is a change of dummies in the window. You may think that Mr. Boehner is going to give you what you asked for, but I will tell you otherwise as I return on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
The United States and our international partners are committed to supporting the Palestinian Authority as it works to overcome these challenges. So today, I am pleased to announce that the United States has transferred an additional $150 million in direct assistance to the Palestinian Authority. This brings our direct budget assistance to a total of $225 million for the year, and our overall support and investment to nearly $600 million this year.
Isn't that good? Doesn't it give you a warm feeling in your heart to know that Hillary Clinton, who ran out of America during the elections so she wouldn't look like a Democrat tied to the Obama administration, just gave away another $150 million to the Palestinians? I love that she used the word, we've transferred an additional $150 million, bringing us to $225 million for the year, and our overall investment. Have you ever heard anything like this in your entire life? An investment in the Palestinians? Yesterday we did hard luck stories in the Savage Nation of people who have lost their homes, their families, because of Obamanomics. And I had you call in with these stories. Some of them were heartbreaking. I have another one here I'm going to read in a minute. I wonder if this $600 million given to the Palestinians this year, let's see. We're not asking for $1 million each to 600 such families. Let's break it down to $100,000 each to 6,000 families. Or let's even go further and break it down to $10,000 each to 60,000 families. Let's say 60,000 families got $10,000 each. I don't know if my math is correct. I did it in my head. Probably right. So that's 60,000 families would get $10,000 each to tide them over for the year instead of giving money to the Palestinians to buy weapons to kill Jews. What, do you want to talk about this or you want to talk about the submarine? Or would you like to talk about the Republican Jimmy Carter, George Bush, who apparently or do you want to talk about the U.S. Navy now being just a floating diversity training ships with propellers? You know, I think the Navy should just stop floating the ships around the earth because they don't do anything. Have they fired a shot at all? No, I don't know of any. One Navy SEAL shot two weapons and killed one pirate. I think one of them was, those weren't indicted. Some other SEALs were. But other than that, it's a waste of gasoline. I think what they should do is mothball the U.S. Navy in various ports and just use them as diversity training showcases. Think of the fuel you'd save. It'd be very green. They could cap the guns. They'd go flowers out of the barrels of the guns. And they could just use them to showcase how diverse America has come so Defense Secretary Gates can get a good warm glow and go on to his corporate consulting gigs when he retires at the end of the year. Of course, Robert Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, can get some nice consulting jobs when he retires at the end of the year. And the Navy, just think of it. No need to float around anymore. No need to have anyone commanding a ship. In fact, there'd be no need to train anyone how to even run a ship. Think of the money we could save if the ships were simply kept polished and oiled in port. They'd be housing for all of those who can't get jobs coming right out of high school. And as I say, a good diversity training lesson. And then, of course, you could put women on submarines and build them more bathrooms and seal up the torpedo tubes.
Savage.
Let me begin with a simple statement. Indonesia, bagian dari diri saya.
I guess Obama's just had his Ich bin ein Berliner moment. Indonesia is a part of me. I never heard him say America is a part of me yet, have you? No, it's strange, isn't it? He got loud cheers at Indonesia saying Indonesia is a part of me. Well, we know that's true. And the question is, how come he's never said America is a part of me? Well, we know the answer to that. We know he's the first sort of us. Oh, I've said it too many different ways. I'm not going to say it again. Why should I trivialize what I've written in 110,000 words? We're talking about much more important things than an imposter in the White House. We've had them before. In fact, we've had them many times before, and somehow the country's managed to survive one imposter or one incompetent or one drunk after another. That's what makes America great. It's the people. One imposter, one incompetent, or one drunk after another couldn't ruin America because the founding fathers wrote a set of rules that prevented these drunks and upstarts from destroying our nation. It's called a balance of power. It's called checks and balances, something that the vermin in the media hate. They call it gridlock now. What you grew up calling checks and balances, the vermin in the media call gridlock. So if you get a incompetent communist president who tries to railroad a communist policies down your throat and you say, hell no, stop it. No. They say, oh, that's gridlock. That mean Republicans, even meaner, nasty, racist Americans, Tea Party racists for standing up to the communist imposter. I never saw anything like this, how he gets away with it. So let's say the figure's not $200 million a day. No one knows what he's spending a day. We know it's extraordinarily high. 3,000 people in the entourage. Let's say it's not 3,000. Let's say it's 2,000. How many aircraft did he just commandeer for his vacation? After his wife went to Spain a few months ago for a nice little trip around Spain and ate ice cream. Wherever she goes, she eats ice cream. And then she comes back 10 pounds heavier and tells you to eat carrot sticks. Let them eat cake. In this case, it's Let Them Eat Carrot Sticks. Here's something just came out to make your day. Rich nations urge to weigh Robin Hood tax to help the poor. Can you believe this? The imposter is at the G20 summit after his whirlwind tour of his homeland of Indonesia. And some of the communists there and the so-called world leaders are saying that we should stabilize the global economy through a Robin Hood tax aimed at collecting money from rich nations to give to the poor. That's interesting because Hillary's already given some of that Robin Hood money to the Palestinians. So they can be, they could be happier. She just gave away how much? $150 million more. Play Hillary Clinton again. I want to get my numbers right.
The United States and our international partners are committed to supporting the Palestinian Authority as it works to overcome these challenges. So today, I am pleased to announce that the United States has transferred an additional $150 million in direct assistance to the Palestinian Authority. This brings our direct budget assistance to a total of $225 million for the year and our overall support and investment to nearly $600 million this year.
That's the new game. So that's the new game in town. They rob you and they call it an investment. Now, at the risk of your displeasure, the Savage Manifesto in Trickle-Up Poverty, which is not to be dismissed, in fact, it should be studied, has 37 points. I'm actually looking to see if it includes ending foreign aid. I don't know. I must have missed that. I don't see it. I don't see that one. How did I miss that one? Keep the estate tax zero, say no to the VAT tax, reduce pay and pensions for civil servants, defend the Defense of Marriage Act, encourage childbearing among taxpaying citizens, make abortions illegal, end affirmative action, limit welfare benefits, voting reform, boot the czars, put the brakes on GM, reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act, reinstate the Wall Street uptick rule, privatize the regulation of Wall Street, encourage risk-taking and entrepreneurship, institute tort reform, run the country like a business, not an empire. I apologize. I should have been number 38. Eliminate all foreign aid. Immediately, we can't afford it. We're a basket case. In fact, we need foreign aid from China, the country that's robbed us blind owing to the traitors inside our own government. Shall I repeat that in case you missed it? Owing to the traitors inside our own government. You want me to name a few of them? You want me to name some of the law firms that led the charge of China into America that reversed the course of this great nation? Shall we start? Let me start with some of the more prominent names of people who are consultants to China for the last number of years, who are former governmental officials, who make certain that China gets her way in our halls of Congress. Let us start with Madeleine Albright. Then let's go to Sandy Berger, Dr. Sox. Remember Dr. Berger? The man who stole some very, very top secret documents that were found in his underwear. The former national security advisor. A low-life lawyer from the firm of Hogan & Hartson in Washington, D.C. Hogan & Hartson, one of the principal vehicles for the China trade, sent their man into the national security position to make certain that China got her way in this country. You want investigations? You want to go back a little further? There's a lot of people who know how far back you have to go. I'll go back a little further. Let us go back to Bill Clinton himself, who had a little relationship with the chairman of the Democrat National Committee. I think his name was Schwartz or Shapiro. Does anyone know his name? A gentleman who created Loral Space and Technology. A man who had started with a parking meter company in the Bronx and then built it into a space and technology company and then used government military technology to launch rockets in order to launch satellites into the sky. And he did so in China because it was cheaper to launch the rockets out of China. And in doing so, he shared military technology with the Chinese. And we were told then, because I was a talk show host then, that they would never use this technology for the military. Oh, no. You know they wouldn't do a thing like that. After all, we were told by Schwartz, or was it Shapiro, who said they would never do that. Where is old Schwartz or Shapiro today? Where is he? Is he anywhere near Madoff? Does he have anything to do with Madoff? I doubt it. But we know Madoff is in jail for having bilked tens of thousands of people of their life savings. But what about the individuals who have built us of our national pride? What about the people who have built us of our national security? What about the people who have built us of our national identity? Shouldn't they be sharing a cell in the same prison with Mr. Madoff? Aren't those crimes just as bad? Some would ask. I think. Yes, I think so. But the chance of it happening is nil, less than nil, less than zero. So let's, we the little people, think about what's going on. A missile trail seen off the coast of California by a CBS cameraman, identified as the trail of a missile fired either from a surface ship or a submarine. The U.S. Pentagon says we don't know what it is, but it's definitely not from a ship. But you little people now go into your UFO fantasy. Now go into your little late-night radio shows and start talking about UFOs. That's where we want you to go with it. Just be a useful moron. Go on late-night radio and talk about it was a UFO and little men and little green men came down off the coast of California and blah, blah, blah. That'll put them to sleep again. Blah, blah, blah. So we can make certain that the military is safe for diversity. Have I taken any calls yet today? No, I guess I'm worked up and it's Wednesday. It's amazing what goes on. There was supposed to be no news. Play a little gamelan music, and I don't want to break yet. Just gamelan music to give me a breather here as I collect my thoughts. I actually despise gamelan music, but playing it because it's in the news. There was a period I collected it. It almost drove me insane listening to it. It's for a culture that needs repetitive rhythmic repetitiveness, spitting out red betel nut juice from your juicy lips, making sure none dribbles on your skirt. Rhythmic repetitiveness. Plech. That was a tone poem for those of you who understand what I just did. And those of you who don't. Anyway, here we are. I had a meatball hero for lunch. Hey, you want me to talk about my lunch? I violated my diet three times this Sunday today. I'm so tired of worrying about my diet. Because I have to watch one more late night show about like skulls from 25,000 years ago. Again, a meteor hit and it created every minute. What happened to National Geographic? It used to be a respectable organization. It's become the equivalent of, what's that maniac with the crazy eyes on CNN who looks for horror stories? Nancy Grace. What is it? National Geographic is the Nancy Grace of our time, of the documentary world. Every minute, they have another moron from a university who tells you that there was climate change 20 million years ago that caused the bango, boong, everyone died. Every animal on the earth died. The only thing that survived were the Democrats. A meteor hit that destroyed all life on Earth except cockroaches and Democrats. I just wanted to have a little fun. There are people in television who are like cockroaches. You can't fire them. They don't die no matter what happens. There's nothing that can get rid of them. They just had one on MSNBC. They tried to fire him, but apparently got a shyster lawyer from New York who threatened Phil Griffin of MSNBC, and they hired him back 3 days later. As I said, there are cockroaches that you can't even kill with radiation. Same thing there. And here we are. Rich nations urge to weigh Robin Hood tax to help the poor. Oh, and then I got into a little sidetrack with Clinton saying she just gave money to the Palestinians. If that's not a Robin Hood tax, buying Palestinians automatic weapons to kill Jews. Now, here's the punchline. So now the jerks at the G20 summit, the smartest people on earth, including men like Timothy Geithner, who has to consult comedians on Comedy Central about how to run the economy, and he comes back with print more money, schmuck, just run the press, putz, you own it. He's there too, Timothy Geithner, a man if he didn't work for the government as a stooge of George Soros and other invisible puppeteers, I don't think the guy could get a job in Safeway as a checkout clerk. The money could be used for social programs, we read, to fight hunger, diseases such as HIV/AIDS and malaria or other causes, programs to which the United States and other nations already donate billions. So they want to tax you now with a global tax in order to make sure the money goes for hunger, HIV, AIDS, and malaria or other causes. That's just what the doctor ordered right now. That's something that I'm sure that this government would approve of. Timothy Geithner is quoted as saying that the financial transaction tax, or the Robinhood tax, would raise trading costs and reduce the liquidity that benefits all investors and businesses, while a bank tax could reduce the lending capacity, so he's against it. All right, so the stooge is against it. He's against the tax. That means I should be for it. Why? Actually, when I don't care. See, I don't want to be taxed, but I'm not so sure that taxing. I don't want to see businesses taxed. Let's start with that. I want to stick to what I'm talking about. However, why can't you tax the hedge fund operators? The biggest crooks on earth are the hedge fund operators. The biggest thieves on the planet are hedge fund operators. Why shouldn't they be taxed for every transaction? It wouldn't hurt them. So they'd buy one less Gulfstream. You know what I'm saying? Why shouldn't they be taxed? Why shouldn't the hedge fund operators be taxed? That I don't understand why that would be a bad idea. The Korean presidency has highlighted the key role growth is playing, especially emerging in Asia, and drawing attention to what we can all do to increase the potential for inclusive growth in low-income countries. I really don't care about low-income countries. Why is that suddenly my problem? We have men in this country who were once craftsmen who are unemployed. How about low-income Americans? How about focusing on low-income Americans? Then we could worry about, low-income nations. So I've done my research for you on the Clinton-Loral China axis. No one else on earth knows it, but it was written in 1998 by Joseph Farah of WorldNet Daily, the Clinton-Loral China axis, and my esteemed producer, Beowulf Rocklin, just found the article from May 26, 1998, the Clinton-Loral China axis. I'll read you a sentence or two. Bernard Schwartz, chief executive officer of Loral Space and Communications, tells the New York Times he considers President Clinton a friend, but not the kind of friend that you can call upon for favors. We're supposed to believe that Schwartz invested $1.3 million, boy, that's chicken feet, in Clinton's political campaigns without the expectation of special treatment. 1998, $1.3 million got you something. Today it gets you a few, I don't even know what it gets for you. Last February, Schwartz needed a quick decision from the Clinton government about the launching of a Loral satellite aboard a Chinese rocket later that month. Within 2 weeks, the president gave Loral permission, overruling the advice of his Justice Department, which was investigating Loral's satellite deals with China. Clinton also broke with past policy and the advice of his State Department and Pentagon. You hear this? At that time, we had an independent State Department. We had an independent Pentagon. We had an independent FBI. Today, it's one seamless, interlocking set of directorships, all run by Obama and his socialist minions. And I would say on this show right now, and I could be mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, I do not know of one head of any of his organizations that is patriotic. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Let's turn to the military for a minute. We have this missile thing off the coast of California, which experts are saying came from a ship or a submarine. Some are speculating it was from a Chinese submarine to show that they can get in and real close and not be detected by our sadly debased military under Obama and Gates. As an article came out today, please go to michaelsavage.com right now, top right. Most top military quitting Obama. This kind of mass exodus of military brass is virtually unheard of. They're quitting. They're all leaving. And he gets to now put in whoever he wants. Maybe some gals from Harvard. Maybe some feminists from Princeton. Maybe some feminists from Yale who've never fired a BB gun can now run the Navy, Army, and Air Force. Why not? Why not even the Marines? Because after all, what they have to do is remake the military in their image, which would be to make sure that the guns don't fire. I want to read to you Obama's war on the military and on national security from Trickle Up Poverty. And then I want to ask you if you're in the military or know someone in the military, if I'm lying. While Obama is axing away at our missile defense, China is working overtime to build up its missile defense system. In January 2010, the Chinese military conducted a successful test launch of an ABM interceptor missile. That's in my book, page 271. What's more, according to one report, China is working on long-range missiles capable of hitting the United States. As soon as China has its missile defense system, it will win the status of a global superpower, which no one will be allowed to ignore. I ask, why is Obama ignoring this buildup? Does this seem like the right time for our president to be making cuts in this vital part of our strategic defense? And I go on, meanwhile, restlessness resides within the European Union. Calls for a joint EU international army are being made by Italy's Foreign Minister Franco Frattini. Even though the EU is a political union, fears that America will betray their allies are in the region. I don't blame them for that, considering the ways our president has snubbed a number of our long-term partners around the world, most notably Israel. And I go on. I then say, Obama is naive. Let's say you don't agree he's a traitor, that he's just a naive socialist. Let's go light. I say this inexperienced man believes the Star Treaty will, like sprinkling pixie dust on the heart of the axis of evil, coax North Korea and Iran into discontinuing their nuclear programs. Obama actually said, well, I don't want to quote myself again. I say, does Obama really think a meaningless piece of paper will stop Ahmadinejad, who called Israel the most cruel and repressive racist regime? Has Obama forgotten Iran's Hitler said that Israel must be wiped off from the face of the world? So what about our friends in Russia? Well, read what I say about that. I say anyone who believes that the Russians will keep their word is a few fries short of a happy meal. Russia has a long history of reneging on agreements, including nuclear agreements. Read it anyway and find out, weep in your beer, that Obama signed a treaty with them anyway. And I say what's more, Obama is far from finished. It's in my book. I'm trying to warn you. I'm the Paul Revere of my time. Wake up!
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Let me begin with a simple statement. Indonesia bagian dari diri saya.
There it is, the Ich bin ein Berliner moment for Barack Obama. Ich bin ein Berliner. If only he had said, once, America is part of me, or I'm part of America. I haven't heard that yet. But I'm waiting for it. I'm an eternal optimist. But we're really talking about the U.S. military, the Defense Department under Mr. Gates, who has a policy of don't ask because we won't tell. And that policy relates to the missile fired off the coast of California yesterday. Or was it a missile? I'm using the British because I'm banned in Britain. I figured I may as well use a little British since I will never go there again. They like to say missile, aluminium, as opposed to aluminum. They say other weird things. They don't know how to pronounce English properly over there anymore. They have so many immigrants from the third world, they've probably forgotten their own language. They're embarrassed by it. But that's neither here nor there. What's here is that we have a missile fired off the coast of California, seen by many people, including a CBS cameraman. They say, Jane's defense analyst says it's a missile, clearly a missile, fired either from a ship or a submarine. And we suspect it could have been a Chinese sub that snuck in, bypassing all of our defenses, because we have no real defenses anymore. We have a Defense Department concerned really about diversity as opposed to national security. It's really pathetic that I even have to say this. You think I enjoy this? I mean, I don't enjoy this. I don't enjoy it at all. I grew up as a kid in my dad's car driving over there. You don't want to hear, okay, dad's car anymore. I'll tell it to you anyway. As a kid, in Dad's car, the DeSoto, the old Cadillacs, driving over the Williamsburg Bridge, which was right over the Brooklyn Navy Yard. Remember, I go back away a while in time. So how old could I have been? I don't know, but it was post-World War II, and the Brooklyn Navy Yard was bustling. Today, they produce pornography and websites in that area. The Silver Cup Baking Factory doesn't make bread. Now they make pornographic movies with actors from the Lower East Side who are allegedly famous. In my day, they actually made bread and they actually repaired ships. Today, they make pornography and repair nothing. They can't even repair a broken heart. But the fact is, we go over the Williamsburg Bridge in the car, and they had those little the grates. It always scared me. The car would make that sound, that rumbling sound. I hated it. Kids are weird. Like, the kid looks down between the cracks of the roadway and sees the water, and he's sure the car is going to fall in. And you look at your father, you think he's Superman because he doesn't care. He doesn't even look. It means nothing. I mean, he doesn't even think about it. Why should he? No car has ever fallen through the roadway. kids are like on LSD. Kids naturally are on psychedelics because they see everything in a distorted manner. When you think about it, a kid sees things the way paranoiacs see things on LSD or mescaline. So the kid looks down through the roadway, the metal roadway, and he sees the water on below him. He figures the car could fall into the water, and he's in a state of fear. Father just drives ahead in the undershirt to go to another horrible day at work, hoping to God someone buys something so they have food on the table. Anyway, below us was the Brooklyn Navy Yard. To the right was the Domino. I used to love the Domino Sugar Company because that's where I first got my love of the sea and of the tropics. I would sit, you know, kids. So I'd see, like, these ships unloading sugar to the Domino Sugar Plant underneath that bridge. And I imagine, like, I have such an imagination, you have no idea. I saw the ship coming and I saw the whole transit. I saw the sugar cane being grown, the happy natives with the machetes, the bales being lifted up, the cranes on the waterfront, Marlon Brando, Carl Malden, axes, hair, you know, meat hooks, the sugar being unloaded down into Domino, the sugar being made and having the grinding, whatever. And on the left side, there was the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And there were aircraft carriers with big numerals on them. And battleships and cruisers and destroyers bustling in to be repaired by men who had welding irons in their hand, who knew how to fix ships. You know, I've got mail. You hear, that's what I have today. You hear my in the background what I have today? That's what I have today. You've got mail. Everyone runs around with the oracle in their hand, looking underneath the table. They go to dinner. They don't talk to each other. A whole family goes to dinner. Four people, a man, a woman, two children, age 12 and 13. And within 3 minutes, the father's looking under the table at his BlackBerry, answering emails. The mother's answering emails under the table. The son is playing a video game under the table. The daughter is on Facebook finding out what pimple cream her friend is using. And nobody talks to anybody anymore. No wonder no one could fix a ship. Or make any sugar. Or make any bread. I don't want to just complain about things, truthfully. But in those days, the Brooklyn Navy Yard actually repaired ships. Interestingly enough, Henry Miller grew up in the Brooklyn Navy Yard area. You got to read some of his stuff from that period. A Black Spring was in very interesting books about that era. Very fascinating. Which is neither here nor there. But I don't really feel like talking much more about the missile in the air because... What do you think I'm going to get out of this? Agita. More agita. So instead, what I'm going to do is play, just to diverge a little bit, I'm going to play Jack Kerouac reading from On the Road on the Steve Allen Show in 1959. That's all.
Anyway, I wrote the book because we're all going to die. In the loneliness of my life, my father dead, my brother dead, my mother far away, my sister and my wife far away. Nothing here but my own tragic hands that once were guarded by the world, a sweet attention, that now are left to guide and disappear their own way into the common dark of all our death. Sleeping in me raw bed alone and stupid, with just this one pride and consolation, my heart broke in a general despair and opened up inwards to the Lord. I made a supplication in this dream. In the last page of On the Road, I describe how the hero, Dean Moriarty, has come to see me all the way from the West Coast just for a day or two. We've just been back and forth across the country several times in cars, and now our adventures are over. We're still great friends, but we have to go into later phases of our lives. So there he goes, Dean Moriarty, ragged in the moth-eaten overcoat he brought specially for the freezing temperatures of the East. Walking off alone, and last I saw of him, he rounded the corner of 7th Avenue, eyes on the street ahead, and bent to it again. Gone. So, in America, when the sun goes down, and I sit on the old broken-down river pier watching the long, long skies over New Jersey, and sense all that raw land that rolls in one unbelievable huge bulge over to the West Coast, and all that road going, and all the people dreaming in the immensity of it. In an hour, I know by now that children must be crying in the land where they let the children cry. And tonight the stars will be out, and don't you know that God is Pooh Bear? Couple of dims on the prairie, which is just before the coming of complete night that blesses the earth. Darkens all the rivers, cups the peaks, and folds the final shore in. Nobody knows what's going to happen to anybody besides the forlorn rags of growing old. Think of Dean Moriarty, or even think of old Dean Moriarty, the father we never found. Think of Dean Moriarty. I think of Dean Moriarty.
Now, I don't know why I keep playing this, because I do know why I keep playing it, because On the Road was a seminal book in my life. I was 17 years old when the book came out, and had I not read that book, probably would have been an accordionist or a dentist. But and there's nothing wrong with being a dentist or an accordionist, and my dentist confronts me on this every time I go under the chair, and he's got me under his power. And he said, "So, you put down dentists, do you?" I said, no, I don't mean it in a derogatory manner, Mr. Dentist. I don't mean anything by that when I say I would have been a dentist or an accordionist had I not read On the Road. On the contrary, I mean that you're a hipster dentist in that sense, so please drill carefully, because these are golden teeth connected to a golden tongue, connected to a golden mind, which is on the golden road. I'll be right back.
Savage.
As the drive hits the deep right field, that ball is going, it is gone. Maris hitting his second homer of the day.
USA in your Chevrolet. America is asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet.
See, that's the USA. These three little sound bites are the America I grew up in. Baseball, cigarettes, and see the USA in a Chevrolet. Now, I can make, you know, quips about all of that, but what's the point? You get it. There's no point in me reversing it just for entertainment value. So I'll quote Ben Franklin, who goes back a little bit before my time. He wrote in 1775, a few years before I was born, the following. He wrote, "They who can give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety." And, of course, we're talking about the socialist Democrats who've seized power in America through trickery and through a false meltdown of our economy. And I'm going to read something to you. Here it is. Look no further than where the money has actually gone from your pockets. Unlike the legendary medieval outlaw lurking in Sherwood Forest, a man whose mission was the betterment of the poor, President Obama has robbed from the middle class to give to the rich. See, no one has said it the way I have. That's the entire thesis of trickle-up poverty. He's robbed from the middle class to give to the rich. You may want to read that again. Contrary to how it's been sold, there's no money falling down from the rich to the bottom to the poverty-stricken. Don't take my word for it. The evidence is everywhere. Millions of families in the middle class have lost their homes either to foreclosure or a short sale because they could no longer make their mortgage payments. Foreclosures and mortgage delinquency in the United States are at the highest level since 1972. Both business and personal bankruptcy filings are on the rise. Obama wanted you to believe the stimulus money would be used to head off another depression by creating millions of new jobs. Weeks before taking office, President Obama started campaigning for his bloated stimulus measure, which he claimed would save or create 3 to 4 million jobs. What does he know about the topic? Is he a businessman? Has he ever owned a pizza shop or had to meet the payroll of a corporation of any size? Answer, no. What does he know about job creation? Nothing. In spite of his lack of experience or knowledge on the subject of job creation, Obama projected, quote, 90% of these jobs will be created in the private sector. The remaining 10% are mainly public sector jobs we save, like the teachers, police, firefighters, and others. It sounded good on paper, but he's wrong. He hasn't created new jobs. The opposite is true. Just look at where we are 1 year after rushing through the passage of the $819 billion Porkulis bill. Rather than alleviating the plight of millions of Americans, we're witnessing record levels of unemployed people on welfare or receiving unemployment benefits. Well, okay, the rest, you get the picture, right? You don't want to hear it. So we had the stories on yesterday. Start the story right now of a listener to the show who sent this to us. Let's listen to it.
I was never rich, but up until 2008, I was doing okay and considered myself middle class. Since then, I've been laid off by four jobs due to unfortunate economic circumstances. I was a director of security, valet, and transportation at an Oregon casino when I lost my first job, so I moved back to Las Vegas and experienced more job losses as the recession grew and companies dropped employees like a bad habit. I can't even get a job as a security officer, as they feel I'm overqualified or may cause problems for management since I'm usually the one running departments. I started as an officer in 1996 and worked my way up to the top twice. It all seems for nothing these days. I've worked as a graphic designer, security manager, director, retail operations management, and a day laborer, but can't find anything. I applied at several fast food joints lately and they tell me that I'm overqualified, or that their positions are usually geared for younger people, even though I'm only 35. I'm beside myself for being jobless, overqualified for positions I've never held, and sucking off the unemployment system to try and feed the kids. Like you, I was also denied a job due to diversity. The HR director later told me that I was the most qualified, interviewed the best, but was not the right color, if you know what I mean. As he explained, the job needed to be given to an African American. Listening to you is the only thing that gives me hope. You've been the only male voice of reason in my life for years. I appreciate everything you've done for me. You've helped me remember where to point my moral compass and give my family the man I never had. We refer to you as Uncle Savage in my home. The four kids also listen to you from time to time. If you're ever in Las Vegas and need a security professional, I'll do it for free, and I'd protect you with my life. Obama's class warfare is killing us. His policies are a wrecking ball, and you were right all along. Diversity and multiculturalism are a cancer within our job market. Obama is a joke and a disgrace to America. Not only have his policies ruined America, I'm willing to bet he takes some sick delight in all of the hardworking blue-collar men feeling like we've lost our manhood and replaced it with hope and change. If you know of anyone in Las Vegas that could put a white male conservative to work, I'll do anything. It doesn't matter what the job is. I'll work my way up like I always have. God bless you and your family, Dr. Savage. America needs you, and we need you. Your voice is the only comfort I have in these dark times. P.S. Please read more of Trickle Up Poverty on the air. I'm sure there are others like myself that can't afford it right now. A fellow patriot and a Savage Nation supporter. Got the coffee mug to prove it.
Well, I can't say a word. This is an example of the kind of emails that my staff is getting from people out there who responded to the show yesterday of how has Obamanomics affected you. And it's heartbreaking to listen to this. I only wish there was a way to switch people who call like this, you know, switch them into a job somehow. I suppose he could apply to Harry Reid for a job, but I doubt he'd get anywhere. But, you know, petty jokes aside, what are we supposed to do for the millions of people who've lost their dignity as a result of Obamanomics? But more importantly, who did this to us? I am telling you, it was manufactured. It started under Bush. It started under Bush, the Jimmy Carter of our time.
Savage.
For all of you like that listener who wrote that letter that we had read on the air just now, a man who's tried his best and has nothing, he's broke, living on unemployment, I want to read you something, and I want you to think carefully And I want you not to seek vengeance, because vengeance leave to God. I've said that in my own life at various times when people have come to me over something that's happened to them and they know who did it to them. And I said, you know what? Don't seek vengeance. Vengeance is God's to seek. Not only does it calm them down, it calms the world down. So let me read this to you. It's short. Woe to them that devise iniquity and work evil upon their beds. When the morning is light, they execute it, because it is in the power of their hand. And they covet fields and seize them, and houses and take them away. Thus they oppress a man in his house, even a man in his heritage. I mean, I got chills up my spine, because this is written in biblical days in Micah. There were men who were just like the men of today, taking away houses and taking away property. And they oppress a man in his house, even a man in his heritage. Therefore, says the Lord, behold, against this family do I devise an evil, from which you shall not remove your necks. Neither shall you walk upright, for it shall be an evil time. In that day shall they take up a parable against you, and lament with a doleful lamentation, and say, we are utterly ruined. Well, that could be Mr. Madoff sitting in prison saying, we are utterly ruined. He changes the portion of my people. How does he remove it from me? Instead of restoring our fields, he divides them. Therefore, thou shalt have none that shall cast the line by lot in the congregation of the Lord. Preach ye not, they preach, they shall not preach of these things. They that shall not take shame, do I change, O house of Jacob, etc., and so on. Now, some of this is very hard to understand. Some of it is almost turning within oneself against oneself, if you read it in a certain way. But I try to read it in a very straight-on way, because I don't have the kind of mind that can carry around that kind of complexity. I try to keep things very straight. And what he's saying is, woe unto them that devise iniquities and work evil upon their beds. When the morning is light, they execute it, because they have the power to do so. And they take away your fields and your houses, and they even take away your heritage. And so he says, behold, against them, when he says against this family, do I devise an evil, meaning God is going to devise an evil against those who took away your house. He's going to devise an evil against those who took away your birthright and your heritage. And I am telling you as I stand here, it started last week with the election. I am telling you, this was the work of God. God saw what America needed, and God acted through the Tea Party. God acted through thousands of ways. All the people who went to every little Tea Party meeting. You know, it didn't start with the Tea Parties. It started with the town hall meetings. Do you remember those days? Do you remember how the vermin in the media used to categorize you? You, the middle class, who went to those meetings and spoke out against these evil, oppressive SOBs in the Democrat Party who treated you like filth and like dirt? Do you remember what the vermin in the media called you? Do you remember the names they cast upon you? These snide little SOBs? The snickerers on MSNBC, where every word is another little snicker and a snide little joke, like they're still in college dorms smoking a joint and eating bad food. But, as I say, God sees the truth but waits. And I believe that they're going to have a day of reckoning, every last one of them. I really do. I truly believe it. I have faith. I have faith that this election was just the beginning, not the end. And woe unto the Republicans if they screw the people. Woe unto John Boehner and that gang if they do to us what they did before. Woe unto them if they do to us again. There's a consciousness that once it's awakened, it doesn't go back to sleep that easily. Oh, I know, it's Thanksgiving, jingle bells, Christmas, Bing Crosby, snowflakes in the air and all of that. And the people feel sated somewhat that they put in, you know, they kicked out the Democrats. But they're very leery of the George Bush Republicans who have now been put back in power, because the minority within that group are the Michelle Bachmans, who are now being shafted by the mainstream Republicans. The Check Pants Dick Army Republicans, who try to co-opt the Tea Party movement, are now co-opting the entire Tea Party, all the Tea Party candidates who just won power. So things are going to get very, very quiet for a while, and then they're going to get very, very noisy again very soon after the first of the year. Well, it can't be right after the first of the year when Congress comes in session. But between now and then, you know that the gang that did this to us is going to work overtime between now and December to rob as much as they can before they leave office. That's why NP will not leave office. That's why NP is still asserting her authority, even if she doesn't intend to run again. She wants to show that she's still boss right now. I can guarantee you that the excesses that you've seen thus far are nothing compared to what's coming between now and the end of December. You wait until Boss Tweed gets back from Indonesia. You wait until Boss Tweed comes back from his big trip to Asia. You wait indeed. So here we sit, awaiting Thanksgiving. I myself, it's my favorite holiday, favorite American holiday. I understand the Brits leave the country during that holiday. They don't even understand it. Most immigrants don't celebrate Thanksgiving. They don't even understand the significance of it because there's no longer any citizenship tests required. Most young white chicks don't eat turkey because they're vegetarians who live on white rice, getting beriberi of the soul. But I myself like to make a turkey. I know all the tricks. I know all the tricks. So get now for the Thanksgiving table, all my friends. Get now for the Thanksgiving table, all my friends. Get what now for the Thanksgiving table, all my friends? Get your ducks in a row, my friends. Get your arguments lined up. Don't just sit there like a turkey yourself. Why can't you go to the Thanksgiving table and converse? Why can't you talk about borders, language, and culture? Why can't you pleasantly, well, I know it'll erupt into an argument, but so what? That's what families are for. You can't argue with strangers. You're liable to get hurt. That's why God gave us families, so we can argue with them and not get hurt. At least that's how I see it. It's actually quite logical, isn't it? I mean, you can't go out into the streets and argue with a stranger without a risk of getting murdered or beaten up. But you can go to a Thanksgiving table and try to reason with unreasonable relatives. You can talk about the impoverishment of America over the Turk, couldn't you? I mean, maybe the children want to hear adults have an adult conversation. You don't want to just sit there like a dummy yourself. You want to be like human cranberry sauce, sitting there melting in the candlelight? I can't go for those kind of things. So get thee for a Thanksgiving table. Confront lib relatives. No, I don't like that sound. I never like chicken coops or chicken yards. I don't like it. They're hysterical. They sound like the League of Women Voters before a Democratic caucus. Play that again. Let me hear from just for a second, I want to see if I recognize any. Yeah, that's the Marin County League of Women Voters. Whenever Hillary came to town. That's when Barbara Boxer has a caucus. That's what it sounds like. Yeah, here we go. So next, the next big story is that most top military are quitting Obama. When I saw that story this morning, I put it on the top of michaelsavage.com because it shocked me. Openings give Obama a chance to shape military, says the radical feminist who wrote the article. She's thrilled that the men are actually leaving the military so they can jam some radical feminists into the Marine Corps, Navy, Army. Here's one place with plenty of job openings, the E-ring of the Pentagon. In the next several months, the Secretary of Defense and four of the six uniformed members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff are expected to retire. This kind of mass exodus of military brass is virtually unheard of, said John Udyad, a Republican strategist and former spokesman for the Senate. It's very rare to have so many service chiefs up all at once. Even in peacetime, this would be a lot of turnover, a lot of change for the biggest part of the discretionary budget. But in wartime, it's even more complicated and needs to be done with great care to ensure that there's a smooth transition. Smooth transition? Are you kidding me? There's going to be no smooth transition. It's going to be the complete and total deballing of the U.S. military that's coming. I'm actually terrified as to what Obama's going to do and who he's going to appoint. He's liable to take the people from MSNBC and make them the head of the military. Can you imagine that if he took some of those lunatics and put them in the military? I mean, it can happen. Don't think it can't happen. You know, on the reverse side, good things can happen where you take people from the media. Colonel Alan West hired away a radio host from WFTL in Florida. That's my affiliate in Florida. And Joyce Kaufman was on before me. She's going to Washington to be his chief of staff, which I was amazed by. Amazed in a positive way. A positive way. She knows what she's talking about, and so does he. He's a war hero. And the vermin in the media can't stand that Alan West is a real war hero. Instead, every reference to Alan West is he shot a gun off near the air of an unarmed prisoner, and he resigned shortly thereafter. That's what you read in the media. They try to, you know, debase everybody who's any good in this country. But we shall overcome. That's all I can say. We've overcome them in the last election. We overcome them with shows like this. I overcome them in the bookstores. I'm telling you, we can win. Let me be an example to you. I was down. I was out. They counted me out. They thought they destroyed me. And I'm speaking now to the millions of men in this country, some of whom may be listening to the show, whose lives have been altered by the affirmative action police of the ACLU, who said to me 20-some-odd years ago, some people's lives will have to be put on hold so that other people's lives can be pushed forward. And so they said white males need not apply. Well, I thought my life was over, but it wasn't over. I found a new way to make a living, and I left my then-chosen profession, probably for the good of mankind, as I look back. As who wrote this? I think it was Blake wrote. I know Huxley wrote it, probably from Blake. Life must be lived forward, but can only be understood backward. You ever hear that one? Life must be lived forward, but can only be understood backward. I've always liked that one. I've thought about that for the last 20, 25 years. Because you don't quite know why things happen to you when they happen to you. And somehow, if you can just live through some of these whitewater times, you know, you come out of it another way, sometimes better, sometimes not better, but you come out of it. Life goes on, as they say, and you look back and you say, you know what? In some ways, I'm happier. I was better off. I mean, there are men who lose everything, and they wind up with a humble job, living in a humble manner, and you know what? They don't feel as bad as they did when they were rich and running around like a lunatic, smoking 5 packs a day because of the pressure they were under. I don't mean they're ecstatic. I don't mean they're running around, you know, happy like in a Disneyland, but somehow they come to peace with themselves about the way of the world. And that's what you have to accept, which is sometimes you have to accept the diagnosis that the doctor of life gave you. Life deals you a bad hand. I mean, what are you going to do about it? You can curse it all you want. So, look, just sitting here, you know, pontificating about it is of no use to you. I understand that. So we can go back to the missile launch off of the coast of California that we've been talking about, that the Pentagon says, don't ask because we won't tell. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Is the one and only Michael Savage back with you on the Savage Nation. Let's go to the callers. Pittsburgh, PA. Scott, welcome. You're on the air with Michael Savage and millions of others. What's on your mind?
Just calling to tell you that I think that you're not using your full mind capacity here. You're a brilliant man, and I think you're thinking narrowly. This is a show of strength. We've put those people, those 43 gunships are out there for a reason. And I think that this may be the first thing Obama's done right by doing this, and accidentally.
Well, I actually said that last week. I said either it is gunboat diplomacy, okay, which is what I said I hope it was if you heard the show. I said, or it's a provocation. Did you hear that show at all?
No, I didn't. I didn't catch that.
Well, you see, I wouldn't expect you to listen to every word I utter, but last week when I read that he was bringing all these warships with him, I said either it is a show of force, meaning gunboat diplomacy, or, listen to this, or a provocation is what I said. I actually think it was a provocation, which is why I believe this missile fired off the coast of California was a reaction from a Chinese submarine. I believe that he provoked China to show them that to show us that despite our warships being in their backyard, they have stealthy submarines right off our coast. Is that a plausibility?
It is a plausibility, but also open up this other window that perhaps it's one of our own submarines shooting and not telling anybody a missile at our own ships just so that we can knock it down right in front of their faces and say, hey.
Whoa. Okay, let's take your scenario. The missile fired off the coast of Catalina between blah, blah, blah. You're saying was our own sub firing a missile for what reason?
To show that we can destroy it. In other words, if their attacks against us would be useless.
Well, but I don't see anybody having destroyed a missile. Nobody shot the missile down.
But But we don't know that because nobody's telling us that. They won't even tell us whether we know where it came from yet, and we probably do because our government is not stupid. I mean, our military has fine, fine equipment and probably, well, the finest in the world, even though we won't disclose it to everyone. Maybe we're doing this behind the scenes. This Obama presidency is a farce. It's going to go away. And perhaps this investment...
But the Pentagon is saying it was probably an airplane. Just came out. Evidence indicates mystery plume was a plane contrail. The streaks in the Southern California sky on Monday appear to have been an aircraft condensation trail, a Pentagon spokesmouth said Wednesday. Rocket launch is what Jane's military advisor said. So why would the Pentagon say it was that when you're saying that if it was a rocket, it was meant to warn China that we can get them?
It's a known fact that Obama's a lame duck. The 643 losses that he had this past voting period shows that he's a lame duck. And everybody knows it, but the Pentagon wants the world to know that we're still in charge. We're not going down quietly onto this good night. We're not going down quietly. And the Tea Party...
Well, I would agree with you if this was launched in the South China Sea from a U.S. submarine. I would say it would be saber-rattling on the part of the U.S. Navy. But it was launched right off the coast of California. So how does that fit your argument?
Well, it would be too close if it was fired from nearby. They can't reach us yet. You said so tonight. And they're trying to reach us. And once they can reach us, they are the dominant world power.
So in other words, we're going to threaten ourselves to show them how powerful we are?
We're not threatening ourselves by dropping a missile perhaps, maybe 50 miles in front of our war flotilla that's out there with all the capabilities we have of destroying it. And I'm not a conspiracist or anything like that. I'm just thinking outside the boxes, opening my mind up, trying to think. You're a brilliant man, and what you say is about gospel to me. You know, you speak truth. And what I'm saying here is open your mind up. Perhaps this is an investment in our future where we're showing how much force we do have, and we're not telling anybody right now, but maybe it'll leak out later on what it actually was.
Well, I can't answer that because I don't know what it was, but the experts who know these things say it was definitely the trail of a missile. The footage from a webcam says it was a missile. Experts in the military say it was a missile, so the question is whose missile? Break it down to brass tacks. Let's all agree it was a missile fired from a submarine. Was it a U.S. submarine firing it off the coast of Catalina to show that we can fire it? What for? They know we have missiles that can be fired. So I don't understand your argument. I personally would think it's the other possibility, using strict logic, that China slipped in, got past all of our defenses because they've done it before, as I said to you, November 10, 2007 to the day. They snuck up on one of our aircraft carriers with their electric engines on. And here they are sneaking up to California, firing a missile just to show us that they're in our backyard. They can do what they wanted. Isn't that a possibility?
I would, strictly logically speaking, I would agree that your argument could be valid. However, there's also another strictly logically speaking argument that would say, hey, perhaps we got annoyed with the fact that they have done so many things right in front of our faces, like we were just talking about the missile, the submarine that sneaked up in front of our flotilla. Perhaps we're saying back, look, not only can we shoot something at you, we can shoot it at ourselves, and we can destroy it.
No, but you're not making sense. Why would we shoot it at ourselves? If we were doing it to threaten China or to show them how tough we are, we'd fire a missile off the coast of China, wouldn't we, instead of off the coast of California? Look, I like your logic, but it failed at the end. I'm sending you trickle-up poverty so you can sharpen your reading skills.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now listen up. Now, the big story out there is the uninvited guest. And the uninvited guest is, well, let's put it to you this way. There was a missile that was shot off the coast of California yesterday or the day before that the U.S. military is denying it knows anything about. They're saying, oh, we don't know anything about it. You know, we don't know what it is. We have no idea what it is. What is this? Missile seen rising from sea off Catalina heading west. But no danger to the U.S. Now, questions are being asked by intelligent bloggers. Could this event have been fired by a Chinese submarine? And the article is the uninvited guest. Chinese sub pops up in the middle of the U.S. Navy exercise, leaving military chiefs red-faced. Now, that was referring to a previous event back in November of 07, when a Chinese sub popped up in the middle of a U.S. Navy battle fleet, catching us by surprise. And it was an aircraft carrier. I think it was the USS Kitty Hawk that was on patrol. And an undetected Chinese submarine popped up at the heart of a recent Pacific exercise close to this 1,000-foot supercarrier with 4,500 personnel on board. The problem is, how did it do it? There was a whole screen of ships that was supposedly created in order to catch an invader. According to NATO officials at the time, this incident caused the U.S. Navy a lot of embarrassment. See, the Americans had no idea China had a fast-growing submarine fleet and had reached such a level of sophistication. They said it was as big a shock as the Russians launching Sputnik. Now, the question is, how did it happen? The People's Liberation Army Navy submarine fleet includes at least two nuclear missile-launching vessels, and its 13 Song-class subs are very quiet, almost impossible to detect when running on electric motors. So the question is, this missile trail that the Defense Department is saying they don't know what it is off Catalina Island the other day, could it have been a Chinese sub firing a missile as a part of saber rattling? That's the thing people are asking about. Because the fact is, we don't know. We have no idea because our own military dismissed the entire affair as unknown. But I believe Beijing may have been sending a message to America and the West, demonstrating its rapidly growing military capability to threaten us. Don't you think? Well, people in the business think so. It certainly was a wake-up call for the Americans the last time it happened. In January, China carried a successful missile test, shooting down a satellite in orbit for the first time. I wonder what has to happen for us to wake up to the fact that the enemy within has sold us out to China. Okay? So let's go back again to the main story. CBS News footage showed a missile trail rising from the sea off Catalina heading west just a day or so ago, right? And the military says no danger to us. And I'm asking today, were our Chinese friends behind the mystery launch, and were they simply sending a message to us as a part of saber rattling? Well, I don't think we'll ever get an answer to that one. Do you, Beowulf?
I don't think so, but it's interesting that this comes right on the heels of the announcement that within two years, the Chinese economy is going to be as big as ours. We've really been sold down the river, not only militarily, but economically as well.
Well, nobody knows what the missile trail is. Isn't it great knowing we have Homeland Security and the Defense Department? It has no idea what a missile trail like this means.
Very comforting to have Gates in power when the barbarians are at the gates.
It's very powerful to know that we have Big Sis frisking women at airports through her minions, right?
Fantastic.
And she doesn't know who fired the missile, if it even was a missile.
They can't tell one from the other. They're nuts.
Well, the military says the missile-like object was not a missile. But an expert interviewed by a London newspaper is sure it was. And we're talking about the mystery of the California contrail, and it continues. What is it? Well, the Pentagon doesn't know. They're interested in don't ask, don't tell. I guess they mean when it comes to an actual threat to America, they're into don't ask, don't tell, correct?
That's it. That's it exactly.
Like if you said to the defense secretary, was that a missile or not? He would say, don't ask, don't tell.
or I don't even want to go there, as with the Fort Hood shooting.
The video of what looks for all the world like the contrail of a missile was shot Monday evening by KCBS cameraman Gil Lavis from a news helicopter over L.A. He said, I saw a big plume coming up, rising from the sea that looked like beyond the horizon, and it continued to grow. It was unique and it was moving. So the Pentagon spends billions of dollars a year to make sure it is never surprised by a missile launch. And they say they don't know what it is. Both the Navy and the Air Force insisted they had not launched any missiles. And the North American Air Defense Command declared it had not been fired by any other military. But nobody could say what it was. But Doug Richardson, the editor of Jane's Missiles and Rockets, looked at the video for the Times of London. And he said it's a solid propellant missile. You could tell from the efflux, the smoke. He said it could have been a ballistic missile launched from a submarine or an interceptor, the defensive anti-missile weapon used by Navy surface ships. How do you think of that, Beowulf?
It's crazy. I guess every time now we think 26 miles across the bay instead of Santa Catalina, we think of Chinese missiles.
During the election, Hillary Clinton was, you know, globe-trotting around the world. Now, of course, the president is having a good vacation, and she's coming home. And guess what she just announced?
The United States and our international partners are committed to supporting the Palestinian Authority as it works to overcome these challenges. So today, I am pleased to announce that the United States has transferred an additional $150 million in direct assistance to the Palestinian Authority.
$150 million more dollars for the Palestinian Authority.
Assistance to a total of $225 million for the year.
Diplomatic initiatives? You know you're going to end up arming terrorists with money you've taken from the American taxpayer.
This figure underscores the strong determination of the American people and this administration to stand with our Palestinian friends, even during difficult economic times as we have here at home. This new funding will help the Palestinian Authority pay down its debt, continue to deliver services and security to its people, and keep the progress going. It will support our work together to expand Palestinians' access to schools, clinics, and clean drinking water in both the West Bank and Gaza. And it will allow Prime Minister Fayyad's government to build and modernize courthouses and police stations, train judges and prosecutors, and launch new economic development initiatives.
Now, A, who authorized her to do that? Where did the money come from? And how much of that will go to Hamas terrorists to kill Jews? And moving on, people are getting absolutely fed up with Big Sis's frisks and pat-downs at airports by TSA goons. Even the flight crews are revolting.
Les Johnson missed his connecting flight after he says a flight attendant didn't want to deal with the new pat-down process.
We're getting calls daily about people's experiences. They actually make contact with the genital area.
She makes it clear security is the priority. The union is telling flight attendants who opt out of the body scanner to ask for a private screening with a witness.
We don't want them in uniform going through this enhanced screening where, you know, their private areas are being touched in public.
I believe that there's going to be a real legal revolution against the TSA. Exactly right.
Now some flight attendants are planning to sue.
They have contacted the ACLU. We don't know if somebody may have had an experience with, you know, a sexual assault, and it's going to dredge up some really bad memories.
So what does the union want? Something called a crew pass, allowing them to bypass security because they already undergo background checks and fly so often.
All right, I'll be right back.
Savage.
We're also talking about, have you lost your house because of Obamanomics? Have you lost your family because of Obamanomics? Do you trust self-proclaimed media conservatives who would uncritically interview George W. Bush? I mean, one fake conservative after another seems to be interviewing GW on his supposed book, even though he was one of the worst presidents that we've ever had. A true fiscal socialist. Now, who do you agree with more, me or Bush? Those are some of the stories we've been covering right here on the Savage Nation. I got a good friend owns a bar. I'm not going to go into details, but he lost a lot of money on another place he opened. And he's back to where he started, minus the tax board. Everyone's ripping him off, you know. The guy's working for nothing. The nicest guy in the world. I didn't know what to say to him. I ran into him last night. So he said, you know what, Michael? He said, this is nothing compared to what people go through in the world. And, you know, I said, you're right. I try to remind myself of that every time I go, oh, I can't do this, I can't. I said, I know what my ancestors lived through. They lived on gruel for like 100 years. They had nothing but porridge and like dandelion leaves, you know, with pogroms. I mean, so what are you going to complain about in our country? You know, you got to do the best you can. Stop, you know, you got to put things in perspective. And that's why when you see people, I love when they say they're a survivor. Don't you love that one? I'm a real survivor. I love that one. That's my favorite line. The perky young gals who, oh, yeah, I'm a real survivor. Yeah, you're a real survivor, just like Dachau. Yeah, you're an Auschwitz girl. Are you kidding me? What people have lived through? I say to myself. So the minute the show is over tonight, I got a bottle in mind. Oh, yeah, this is a good French red. Don't get mad at me. It's not domestic. We're allowed to drink French wine again, aren't we? I told you, come the winter, I can only drink French wine in the winter. I get a headache in the summer. My blood changes. But after two glasses of this Medoc, I feel better. I can tolerate virtually everything. And life doesn't seem quite as bad. I never get a hangover from it. It's the same with a certain scotch I drink. There's only one scotch I can drink where I don't get a headache from it. Admittedly, I don't drink a lot of it. And did I tell you about the secret that a friend of mine, he's a man 85 years old, fought in World War II. He does not drink alcohol. He's a teetotaler. But Henry survived World War II in a strange way. They were under artillery bombardment from the Germans, the 88s, which I was told were the most frightening thing in the world. The poor soldiers that was in France after Normandy. Henry was there, a nice, mild-mannered man. You'd never know it. And he said, we were being bombarded with the 88s. He said, each shell sounded like a railroad car coming over your head. And we didn't know where it would land. But when it landed, you know, 50 men were killed. He said, we were running. He ran in a barn. He found a dead cow. He cut the cow's guts out. And he climbed into a dead cow to live through the artillery barrage. Would you believe it? And he lived through it. That's giving an example of what he lived through. So now this man, 100,000 years later, here he is, mild-mannered guy. And I told him a couple of years ago I had a scratchy throat. He said, I don't drink. But every time I feel a cold coming on, he said, I gargle scotch and then I spit it out. Now, some would say that's a waste of scotch. So I took 50% of his suggestion. I gargle the scotch and then I don't spit it out. Now, I'll tell you the truth, the double bang really works. Not only does the gargling work to stop the beginning of the sore throat, etc., and so on. I'll take a call now on the Savage Nation. Here's Houston, Texas. Cynthia, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Dr. Savage, I would like to talk to you about smoking marijuana. You made a comment about people who drive drunk. It's the same as if you drive while under the influence of marijuana. And I have to disagree because I'm 53 years old, and I have been smoking marijuana since I was 15.
You're sure that you drive competently under marijuana, right? It's your judgment that you drive competently when you're stoned. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I do believe so. I've never.
You said you believe so, but that you see what you don't understand is that drugs alter your consciousness, whether they be alcohol, or marijuana, or heroin, or speed. Any one of these substances, even some prescription medications, as we well know, you shouldn't be taking them and driving. There should be a law against you driving stoned, which there is already. And so for you to say with such confidence that you know you drive well under marijuana indicates you shouldn't be driving under marijuana because you don't know if your judgment is impaired when your judgment is impaired. How would you know if it's impaired?
Well, I say that because I've never had an accident. And I am being honest with you. I have never had an accident, and I have probably driven high hundreds of times.
I think the police would have a different view of it, Cynthia. So you're not saying that the millions of people who smoke marijuana should be able to just smoke marijuana and drive, are you? While if they have a drink, they should be arrested?
Well, let's face it. Yes, there are, I'm sure, lots of people who should not drive high on anything. especially children. And
you know what's amazing? Every time I bring up the dangers of marijuana, every time I bring it up, we get people defending marijuana as though it's something good for them. Aren't you aware of the toxins in marijuana smoke?
Yes, sir, I am. I really
okay.
am.
Well, I was afraid you were going to say there are none, that it's natural. And then I would have said there's nothing more that we can say together. I mean, at least you know the risks. You know about the carbon monoxide. You know about all of the dangers of the smoke, and the dangers of it are greater than cigarettes. You know that.
Yes, sir, I do understand that, but I think...
All right, well, okay, then do what you want. I don't even want to have a pot discussion. I have said marijuana is the most dangerous of all drugs because it is a gateway drug and people think it's innocuous. I'll say it again until you finally hear me. It's a very dangerous drug for some individuals. It's 7 to 10 times more powerful than your parents' generation marijuana was because of the way it's been hybridized, etc. It's like a small dose of LSD. And if you want people driving around on LSD, my friend, I don't want to live in that country. Maybe that's why I almost got hit by a bicycle, because the schmuck may have been on marijuana. How many of these moronic bicyclists are stoned on marijuana because they think that they're Superman on a bicycle? But now I'm going to get nothing but pot callers, and I don't want this. Marijuana smokers are very, very defensive and protective of Mary Jane. It's like they're their mistress. They don't even understand how addicted they are. I made my point. And I don't even want to talk about it. America is not alone in suffering through one of the worst financial crises in decades. The rest of the world is reeling as well. Countries like England, France, even communist Cuba are becoming more economically conservative to get through these tough times. But there are those freaks on the left, like economist Paul Nutman, who still believes that our debt has nothing to do with this crisis. And that moron says the only way to get out of this crisis is to spend even more. That's, of course, why he was given a Nobel Prize. Joining us now is Jeremy Warner with the Daily Telegraph in England, who has an article entitled, "Will Someone Please Shut Nutman Up?" Jeremy Warner, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on the show today.
What did Nutman say?
Well, Paul Krugman, he's a Nobel Prize-winning economist and prolific New York Times blogger and columnist. And for a long time now, throughout this economic crisis, he's believed that the solution to the problem is essentially for the government to borrow, to spend its way out of this hole that the economy is in. Now, the article that particularly got my goat is he applied this same analysis to the UK, where we've just had the announcement of a quite severe austerity package to try and put the public finances back on a sustainable footing. My view is that he's actually wrong about the US too, but he's certainly wrong about the UK. My belief is that cutting the deficit is actually essential to the restoration of confidence in the business world. And once that confidence is restored, then you're going to get the sort of revival in investment and trade that is so necessary for economic growth and for sustainability in the public finances.
What major point do you think Nutman is missing?
Yeah, well, what he constantly goes on about is that if you look at the historic trajectory of public debt, particularly in the UK, and I think the same sort of point applies to the US as well, that it's actually been much higher in the past as a proportion of GDP than it is now. And that is perfectly true. But if you look at the reasons for that, it's tended to coincide with really prolonged, all-embracing war, particularly in Britain. If you look back to first of all, the Napoleonic Wars, then later on in the early 20th century, the Boer War, then the First World War, and public finances hadn't even begun to recover from the First World War by the time the Second World War hit.
Mm-hmm.
So that significantly increased public debt as a proportion of GDP. And by the end of the Second World War, public debt in the UK was 250% of GDP. But the fact of the matter is that the plain process of demilitarization, ceasing that military expenditure immediately after the Second World War, was of itself going to considerably reduce spending and therefore public debt in the long term, and that is indeed what happened. But if you look at that trajectory of public debt starting with the Napoleonic Wars, it's hard to argue with the contention that too much debt over a very long period of time is really what did for Britain's economic prowess and geopolitical power. My worry for the US is that if it keeps on spending at its present unsustainable rate, and this is not, there are some wars going on in the world at the moment, that's perfectly true, but then they're small beer by comparison with these vast all-embracing world wars of the past. The problem today is spending on current spending on treating ourselves, and with aging populations, it's on an unsustainable trajectory. Unless something is done about it soon, public debt will rise to levels which seriously begin to crimp other forms of spending, because so much money will get eaten up just servicing the bondholders and the bond vigilantes.
They're telling us there should be no fear of excessive public debt. It's the opposite of Adam Smith's policies. It's the opposite of everything that made America great.
Well, it's perfectly true that bond yields have sunk, government bond yields on both sides of the Atlantic actually, have sunk to record lows. But one of the reasons for that is that in the US, the Fed, and in Britain, the Bank of England, have been engaged in quantitative easing. That's essentially printing money to buy government debt. And indeed, in the States, there's next week, the Fed is expected to unveil another $500 billion package of government bond purchases. The mere anticipation of that intervention in the markets is bound to cause investors to buy bonds, to front-run the Fed, if you like, and buy bonds in anticipation. So they are creating a sort of bubble in bond markets through the policy action that they're applying to try and fight the crisis. So I would argue that that is one of the major causes of reduced bond yields. It's not really of reduced bond yields. It's not really so much the fear of depression, which is what Krugman would argue, as the artificial effect of intensive buying by central bankers.
Certainly there's some correlation between this excessive debt and the decline of Western influence.
Yeah, I think there's a strong correlation, certainly in terms of Britain's declining economic and geopolitical power throughout the 20th century and excessive levels of public debt. In fact, there's no question about that. Fighting wars is not ultimately a healthy process. I mean, I'm not sure Krugman would ever argue that fighting wars is a good thing economically, but he has argued that it was finally the Second World War that finally ended the Great Depression for the United States, and that is to some extent true. If you spend an awful lot of money, public money, you are going to get quite a significant boost to the economy. But the point I would make about that is the one I made earlier, which is that military spending eventually comes to an end, and then public spending declines very significantly, at which point public debt again becomes sustainable. The problem we've got with expenditure at the moment is that's not going to happen. It's just going to carry on rising indefinitely, with the cost of aging populations, the pressure that puts on Medicare budgets, pensioner care, and so on and so forth, as a serious structural reform to those programs has to be made in order to bring public debt under control.
Where do you think it goes from here?
Well, I think it's pretty well established that after serious financial crises, recessions which are induced by serious financial crises, tend to have a long tail. It's hard for growth to reestablish itself because you've got a big overhang of debt which needs to be worked off over time. And that deleveraging process is going to crimp growth for some considerable distance into the future. And there's nothing policymakers can do to avoid that. They can spend or they can print money, but ultimately that debt has to be worked off. And that's why most economists would take the view that growth, at least for the next several years, is going to be slow and bumpy. You're not going to get that same strong bounce back in output that you've historically had after most post-war recessions.
Is it the same problem in America?
I think, now look, I think the problem for America is that it's not used to high levels of structural unemployment. And my fear is that actually that is the real problem in the States. It's not the bogey of future deflation or depression. It's the fact that that there is a lot of structural unemployment in the States. That's entrenched unemployment, which was kind of covered up by the credit boom, but has now sort of come to the surface. And that's going to be a very difficult problem to crack in the U.S. And, you know, that is obviously a very big worry for the future.
Jeremy Warner, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. It's been a huge pleasure.
The left wing wants to keep printing money to get us out of this economic crisis. It will not work. It will only cause more and more and more debt and more problems. I've written all about this in my opus, Trickle Up Poverty. As I spell out, we must stop this before we become the Weimar Republic, where it will take a wheelbarrow full of paper money to buy a loaf of bread. I'll be right back.
Savage.
A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to have, a time to be. To everything.
It's unbelievable. I got chills up and down my spine from this. Go ahead, mock God. A time to break down.
A time to dance, a time to mourn.
Time to dance, a time to mourn. Weigh stones. To gather stones together. Ecclesiastes 2. Actually, it's Ecclesiastes 3. To everything there is a time. Yes, there is a time to laugh, but there's also a time to not laugh. A time to dance, for sure, but a time not to dance. Yes, there's a time to embrace, and there's a time to refrain from embracing. Go tell that to the bisexual sluts in the media who think that tongue-kissing and having your 12-year-old daughter dressing up like a harlot is something that is wonderful in America. Go tell that to the boys from Brazil who are now residing in Los Angeles, who pump pollution into the minds of your children day and night, the sewer pipe from Hollywood into every child's brain in this country. Go tell that to the golden idols of Los Angeles, where Obama is now bowing down to the golden rings. Some president, eh? Some president flying down to Los Angeles for money. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. Read your Bible. There's nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy pleasure for his labor. This also I say, that is from the hand of God. So there, I've given you your Bible. We are a group here on the Savage Nation that is diverse in its thinking. I understand that. And its composition. How do I know who's listening to the show? You go to a stadium, there's 45,000 people and God knows 20,000 outside clamoring to get in. You see every range of human being virtually. Well, except those who are, you know, bedridden. I'm saying quite a range of humanity. From the high to the low. From the good to the evil. And you can't even tell them really from one to the other. And then you come back to a radio studio and you're basically in a laboratory again. I may as well be in a greenhouse. I may as well be back in my days as a botanist, working in a greenhouse, growing rare exotic tropical plants, watching my little plants grow, from the plants that snap dragonflies in their petals to plants that are camouflaged, you don't even know what they are, to humble plants, to aggressive plants. I mean, there's a lot of things going on inside the world of plants. They may not speak, but believe me, they speak quite loudly. They've been around before we were, and they'll be around long after we're gone. As you know, if you've studied the gutters of New York, as I have, you'll see that there are street weeds that grow up in every crack. How is it that a plant can grow up out of a crack in a slummy street? How is it that if you throw garbage in the backyard of a slum in New York behind an apartment building, you'll still find plants coming up under the garbage? Well, go to the Buddhism for that answer. Read your Buddhist tractates. Out of the muck, a flower grows. Have you ever seen the beautiful flower that grows out of the muck of a swamp? Gorgeous. How is that possible? Because it's actually a metaphor for our lives. In some ways, some of us live in a swamp and we want to get out of it. But even in the swampiest creature on earth, somewhere within that swampy creature, there's got to be a flower. Somewhere. I hate to sound so, you know, Dr. Seuss here. And so, Libby, but what am I going to tell you? It's true. Somewhere within all of us, there is a flower waiting to emerge from the muck. And what we have to do as a gardener is find the flower within ourselves. And that's as preachy as I'm going to get today. I got to go back to my normal, you know, show, because I go down this road here, and what happens is some people get turned off. They figure I'm too preachy. Then other people like it because they say I love it, because we don't get it from anywhere. We thirst for the Bible as interpreted through your mind, because you filter it through everyday occurrences and through the news of the day. I understand all of that. I understand all of that. And sometimes I've been very tempted to do a show on the weekend for an hour, you know, a Bible show or a religion show, you know, the all-faith thing. I don't know. I don't have unlimited time on earth, number one. You know, I got to start building my burial mound, my pyramid somewhere. I'm not an ancient pharaoh, but everyone has to think about those days, don't they? What am I going to do with all of my papers, all my writings, all my manuscripts, all my collections? Where are they going to go, all my hopes and dreams that no one's ever seen? Should they just be thrown in a garbage can? That's what I should do. Take all of these all these decades of writing, reading, searching, whether it be from the early days of just being a writer to a botanist to an anthropologist to a talk show host. Should I throw it all in a garbage can? I'm not going to do it. I have to create a little museum, the centerpiece of which will be the 1965 Caddy convertible that I actually thought of auctioning off to get rid of it because I don't need it. But then I said, wait a minute, save it for the museum, put it as a centerpiece to the Savage Museum somewhere. So my mind is like on this other stuff. At the same time, I got one eye on the ground, I got one eye on heaven, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? That's where my head is at right now. So I can't get too heavily into the Bible. That's what I'm saying to you. I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. When I talk about throwing your life in a garbage can, I'm harkening back to my young childhood, I don't know, 5 to 10, when I worked at my dad's antique store on Ludlow Street in New York, now very fashionable with bars and this and that. It was just a kind of a dump when we were down there, really mean streets. Whatever, he made a living out of it. And in the basement of the store, there were various stalls that the men had where they kept the goods that they didn't bring up, mainly junk, you know, they bought at auction, this and that. I'd go down there to clean the bronzes with the cyanide. You've heard that story before. I'm not going to bore you with it again. But in that basement, in that dank, dark, horrible basement, which had one 20-watt yellow bulb, it may as well have been out of Dickens in that cold, unheated basement where I worked as a little boy. Today, he would have been arrested for child abuse. Thank God he wasn't. I mean, I needed a job. I was glad to make the money. It were better that than staying home and smoking pot with the weaklings, you know. So anyway, I'm down in the basement cleaning the bronzes, and there were big barrels. They were old wine barrels that the men bought for, like, junk. Not wet garbage, but as they'd sort through the stuff they would buy at auction, they'd throw the stuff out that they couldn't sell. Or what did they throw out? What they threw out, I found to be precious as diamonds. Here I am, 8 years old, and instead of working with the rubber apron cleaning a bronze, I'm filtering through the barrel, pulling out life stories. I wish to God I could make a movie of this. I wish I could. Well, I will if I ever do the movie of me. This is going to be a seminal scene. I'm down there. I'm supposed to be working, and I'm taking a break from the dank, from the caustic cyanide solution in Dickens' basement. And I'm going through these barrels that the men threw the stuff in that they couldn't sell. And what's in the barrels? You'd see a whole life story. You'd see a young man who goes to Europe as a composer. And you'd see all of his compositions, his musical writings, handwritten now, in the garbage. And you'd see pictures of him on the dock on the west side as he leaves, waving to the friends. Why, there goes John. He's going over to Europe. He's going to be a famous composer. He's going to be an American in Paris. There he was, waving away. And then you see the sequence of pictures of John, the snapshots that were found in the trunk. There he is on the ship drinking and having a drink. Then he's in Paris and he's having a good time. And as the time goes on, he looks worse and worse. And then there's like nothing, like a dull. And then the manuscripts and Dear Mom, and it's in the garbage, the whole life. Then, of course, I told you about the nun's trunk and what was found at the bottom of the nun's trunk, didn't I? It's in my earlier book, Psychological Nudity. But I'm getting off the track right now.
What time to have a time to leave? Savage.